Roundtable Podcasts, underwritten by Proctors, the Capital Region's premier performing arts center featuring the best in entertainment from Broadway and around the globe. Proctors.org.
Author Sandra Newman has written a post-apocalyptic literary epic. In her new novel, The Country of Ice Cream Star, 15-year-old Ice Cream Star and her nomadic tribe live off the detritus of a crumbled civilization. In this world, before reaching the age of 20, they all die of a mysterious disease that has killed for generations. When her brother begins showing signs of the disease, Ice Cream sets off on a journey to find a cure. Sandra Newman is the author of several novels and works of nonfiction, and it's a great pleasure to welcome her to the roundtable this morning. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you, Joe.
What brought you to the idea of this place and this time and ultimately this plague? How did you get there?
Well, I think how it originated from my point of view was that a friend of mine who's a young adult author decided that I should write a young adult novel, which was primarily because he thought that I could make money doing so. And he was a young adult novelist, and he thought that the books that I was writing, which were literary novels, he's always a big fan of mine. But obviously, writing literary novels does not earn you very much money. So he'd been on at me for about 2 years, and I decided to try it. And I came up with a couple of ideas, and I actually emailed the ideas to his agent, who is a very successful young adult agent. And the agent and I both loved this particular idea, which was about a world in which children died before they reached the age of 20. So it's a world completely made up of teenagers and children, and the heroine is 15 years old, as I think you said. But where I think that came from in my mind subconsciously was that it was also a time in the past 2 years before I started working on the project, three of my very close friends had died of various causes. And I was in this prolonged state of shock because of this. And they were all friends of my youth. We all knew each other. We'd all lived together at various points in time when we were about 19, 20, 21 years old. So it was kind of a way of dealing with that fact and the fact that we're all helpless to change the truth that mortality affects us. There's nothing we can do about it. And our generation passes, which, you know, obviously on the radio you can't tell, but I'm rather young to be facing the death of several of my closest friends. And so Ice Cream Star in the book goes out to conquer death, essentially. In her world, death comes to you when you're 19 years old instead of, like in the case of my friends, they were in their early 40s. But she is able to succeed where I could not even start to go on a quest. There was no quest to go on. She's able to head out into the wilderness and find a cure and save her people.
Let us begin with the name Ice Cream Star of where that came from.
Ice Cream Star, it just came into my head. I was trying to think if everyone had children when they were 14, 15 years old, what kinds of things would they name their children? So in the book, she's called Ice Cream. Her brother is called Driver. It's a post-technological world. So in a lot of cases, the kids are just choosing names off of, you know, the sides of cans. So there's a child named Dinty Moore. There's a child named Progresso. Some of them, there are two sisters who are named after magazines of the bygone era, Cat Fancy and Red Book. So it's that sort of thing. They're just kids.
And at what point does Ice Cream Star, because this I found this to be a poignant moment where you say, okay, now that my brother has this plague, this disease, this life ender, that I'm going on this quest to finally stop it. And that idea that that's even possible.
There are two things in the first segment of the book, the first, I guess it's three chapters, but it's really the first episode of the book. So initially, her brother, Driver, coughs. And you always know in a novel, in any sort of fictional narrative, when a character coughs, they're in trouble. They're not going to make it.
Right.
So her brother coughs, and she realizes that he's beginning to show symptoms of the disease from the cough, from the way he handles it. You know, she tries to ask him about it and he doesn't want to talk about it. So he's been sick for a while and hiding it. So she realizes that he's sick. And the next thing that happens is that from a house that they're burning. A man runs out who turns out to be 30 years old. So he's from a different civilization. And she realizes, once she's convinced that he really is 30 years old, that there is a cure somewhere in the world. And for a very long time, although he admits that he's 30, he won't tell her where he's from. Mm. He's always telling her a lot of lies and cock and bull stories about it. But eventually, she manages to worm it out of him. And not to give too much away, the entire people actually evacuates from the area, because it turns out that he's a soldier who's deserted from an invading army.
Mm. And there is such a mystery attached to the stranger, and yet there is a trust and a bond that comes between these two characters.
Yes, it's a very complicated relationship, because in a sense they're best friends, but there's always this gap between them because she's 15 and he's 30 years old. And so from her point of view, they're best friends, because she doesn't really have a concept of people who are that much older. She's never met someone who's that much older. From his point of view, it's very much a paternal relationship. So there's this sort of misunderstanding that goes on between them throughout the book, where he's trying to take care of her and she is trying to take care of him. But since she's 15, she doesn't actually have the means to do that. And there's also inevitably a little bit of sexual tension, but I won't tell you how that turns out.
In the plotting of the novel and in deciding of where you wanted this to go, how much, because it seems that what you really also wanted to focus on was on the brother-sister relationship, of the importance of that relationship to be the catalyst to want to do this in the first place. I assume that was the catalyst.
Yes, that's the important relationship. And partly in this world, the brother-sister relationship, he's an older brother, so that's the only father, the only parent she's really ever had that she remembers. So partly it's a parental relationship. But I think for me, actually in all of my novels, the brother-sister relationship is primary. And I don't know why that is. You know, perhaps my brother probably doesn't know why that is either, because we weren't that close growing up. It's obviously he's more important to me than he knows. Hi, Jeff.
The idea of this plague is obviously so scary. And I'm interested in your original thought of how you reacted to writing a dystopian book.
Once I had the concept of the plague and had it in place so that everybody dies at a certain age, it stopped being frightening or depressing to me. And I was always surprised when people would say to me, oh, this is such a dark world, because to me it was a bit of an idyll. They're living in the woods, they're very carefree, they don't have any responsibilities, they don't have to work. So in a sense, I actually was viewing it as more of a fantasy than as a horrifying thing. And it also seems to me there's something very satisfying about having these kinds of world-changing tasks to do, the quest to go on. So all of it was very escapist for me, and I don't think of it as a depressing world in the way that it might seem if you just hear a description of the contents of the book.
Right.
And also, this was a book where I very deliberately set out to make all of the characters lovable. I think there was something about it. I wanted that escapism. I wanted to be with people whose company I really enjoyed. So it was always a pleasure to work on the book.
That's a really interesting point, because I got that sense in reading the novel, because they are lovable, likable characters. But with that comes hope, doesn't it? Well, okay, these things may work out because we have these characters that, A, we care about, and B, they seem like they can perhaps take care of themselves.
Yeah, I think at the heart of the book, or underlying everything that happens in the book, there is that sort of baffling aspect of life that if you get to know people, almost everyone whom you encounter is essentially good-hearted and well-intentioned, and yet somehow when we gather together in political groups, everything goes wrong. And as members of political groups, we can make very self-interested and callous decisions. So this is the sort of the paradox of the book, is that everybody in it, with one or two exceptions, they're not only good-hearted people, but they're actually very competent and intelligent people who are trying to do their best, and yet the results are almost uniformly disastrous.
Because, again, there's really nothing. They don't know what they're ultimately looking for, because they, on such rare occasions and only in this stranger, have they seen someone who's lived that long, of what that life could be like.
Yes, and it's sort of a metaphor that throughout the book, the word that they use for people is children.
Right.
So everybody is referred to as a child, regardless of their age, even when they encounter people who are middle-aged. Mm. The ice cream refers to everyone as a child. And I'm sort of trying to get at that fact, which is known to all of us who do live past the age of 20, that our essential feeling of helplessness and confusion when we're trying to do anything in the world remains, and we have the passages of feeling competent and feeling like we have a handle on what's going on, but they're pretty fleeting. And ultimately, again and again in the book, Ice Cream thinks that she's changing the world. She thinks that she's going out and she's going to be able to gain enough power to do the things she needs to do to save her people. But again and again, it's revealed that she's a child, and somehow she is out of control after all.
And does it seem, because it often reads as though, and you just said this, that she's doing it for the people, she's doing it for her brother, she's doing it for this civilization. And then that question of, yes, but how much are you also doing it for yourself?
Well, I think I'm a passionate partisan of Ice Cream, the character. So I feel that she is doing it for other people.
Right. So that there's a selflessness there.
Yeah, she is. I conceived of her as a true hero, like a truly heroic person who was uniquely capable not only of being selfless, but of being unconscious of how unusual that is, and unconscious of the fact that, well, not unconscious, but able to genuinely sacrifice herself physically, to actually put her life on the line and not see anything unusual or strange about that. It's very natural to her to do that. And that's one of the things that's, for me, was a pleasure about writing the book, was being in her skin and being that person for 3 years. I think it actually changed me. It turned me into a better person to play at being her for 3 years.
How so?
I think it made me more courageous, and it actually made me more able to step out of myself and be less concerned with my own interests, which I don't want to claim that much for myself, because you don't know where I was starting from. So I might have started from zero and only gotten to 20%. But I noticed the difference, even if nobody else does.
Does a book like this change you as an author, in the sense of what you write next will be, not saying that the same type of book, but in this scope of this large and have that epic feel to it?
Well, it's one thing that I found is that I'm finding it difficult to conceive of writing a book in the real contemporary world again. I sort of fell in love with being able to invent my own universe. And so the next book that I'm planning is a sequel to this book, so that doesn't really count. Obviously, that's in the same universe that Ice Cream Star is in. But then I've got another concept for a novel, which is, almost to my embarrassment, yet another post-apocalyptic novel. Although the apocalypse is different, it's a nuclear winter book. But it's really surprisingly the same in its mood and in that whole idea of having the slate swept clean and you start over again with a civilization that you, the author, get to invent.
So you will be in this creative world for a while, which is fun.
It's fun, yeah. I mean, I sort of hesitate to describe it as fun, because you're talking about...
Well, I don't
think
any writer describes it as fun. That's it.
Oh, well, I just meant the apocalyptic aspect.
Oh, that one, yes.
I don't want to be sending the message that it's fun to me to think of most of the people in the world dying, but of course they're fictional people who never really existed in the first place, so...
Well, Sandra Newman's new book is The Country of Ice Cream Star. It is published by Echo. Sandra Newman, a great pleasure. Thank you very much for being with us.
Thank you very much.
Very nice to have you with us. Again, the title of the book, The Country of Ice Cream Star, by Sandra Newman, published by Echo. You're listening to The Roundtable on WAMC.